Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. In a visit to Georgia Cancer Center in Augusta, Georgia, different experts and faculty members highlighted ongoing research initiatives and potential next steps across a variety of disease types. First, Dr. Giri Raval highlighted key work in the lung cancer field. What kinds of clinical trials or research are you involved with here at Georgia Cancer Center or Augusta University? How might these initiatives help improve patient outcomes?
The research we have going on can be classified under two sections. One is the intervention arm, where we are trying to talk about new drugs, new molecules that are in development and see how they can impact and move the needle on the state of cancer treatment for lung cancer in the nation in general, in Georgia in particular. The other trials that we have are what we are calling about retrospective trials, where we are looking back at our own data and trying to see where we can optimize treatment for these cancer patients. So in that category, we have trials that are looking at the impact of the patient's ethnicity, demographics, their zip code, and their distance from our cancer center, in how those factors impact their overall outcome. And this can be used to then tailor patients' treatments or patient recommendations to try and improve their outcomes. The other trials that we have ongoing are the trials that are based on the effect of radiation in combination with maintenance therapy in metastatic non-small cell lung cancer, trying to see if local therapy with radiation can improve the outcomes in patients who are already on maintenance therapy with metastatic lung cancer patients. There's also a trial that we recently completed about the role of biomarker-driven treatment in patients with small cell lung cancer, where patients who have Schlafen-11, they were given a PARP inhibitor to try and see if that improves outcome in patients who have extensive stage small cell lung cancer. We also are part of the study which are looking at molecules to augment the effect of immunotherapy by combining them with interleukin or pegylated interleukin. We are also looking at trials that are using tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes to try and see if they can improve their efficacy in second, third, or even further lines of treatment down. We're in the process of trying to get trials that are able to address the role of adjuvant immunotherapy after the patient has received neoadjuvant immunotherapy. These are parts of the cooperative group trials, the SWOG and ECOG. And so we have trials which are retrospective, which we have trials which are looking at brain metastasis and the importance of imaging in trying to evaluate the PD-L1 status or see how the PD-L1 status affects imaging in patients with brain mets in lung cancer patients. And so we have retrospective trial looking at social determinants of health. We have trials that are looking at combining targeted therapies, combining patients who have other molecules that can augment the effect of immunotherapy in the metastatic and early stage settings. And we are looking at very novel therapies like, you know, tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes and things like that to see if those can move the needle on cancer treatment.
Looking ahead, how does the field need to evolve in order to further improve outcomes for patients with EGFR-mutated lung cancer or other cancer populations?
Thankfully, we have many treatments that have come to the forefront now, which have shown OS data. We have the FLAURA2 regimen, we have the MARIPOSA, we have the FLAURA1, we have the PFS data from the TROPION lung studies and the daratumumab. And we have some other ongoing trials like the HARMONi-E looking at patients who had bispecific VEGF and PD-L1 inhibition to see if those will be impactful in patients with EGFR-mutated lung cancer. We also have some data that was read out at ESMO this year about sacituzumab govitecan in patients with lung cancer. So we have a problem of plenty in some ways, that we have many trials in this space that are vying for attention, and it's very difficult to then figure out on which niche should these patients be treated or which patient should be treated with which frontline treatment. So I think the bigger question now that I can see in the field is about sequencing. Like, what would you start with? Who do you escalate the treatment in, and more specifically, in who do you de-escalate where you see that there's no advantage of adding the other component of the therapy? So the future in EGFR-mutated lung cancer would be about sequencing, and in what sequence you start and what sequence you would give treatment to these patients.
Next, Dr. Amani Kariakis discussed important considerations in multiple myeloma care. What are some key barriers to the current implementation of bispecific antibodies for patients with multiple myeloma in the community setting?
The barriers. There are plenty. So the barriers come in phases. The first phase is the initial administration of these drugs. All of these drugs in clinical trials are administered inpatient, which is a huge barrier for community sites to be able to administer and to accommodate that request. And second is for the patients itself and for the reimbursement issues. The second phase of the barriers are actually toxicity management, CRS and ICANS, huge barrier in the community to manage these two side effects. And later on, the third phase of barriers are the complications from the treatment on the long term, which are infections, myelosuppression, as well as the hypogammaglobulinemia as well.
How can academic and community institutions collaborate more effectively to optimize the care of patients with multiple myeloma, especially with the advent of new immunotherapies?
Well, it's not easy for community providers to collaborate with academicians because of the time sensitivity of these toxicities and also having someone to ask whenever any of these happen, because it's just a busy schedule, busy lifestyle. So the main key here is to have a very strong relationship between community providers and academic institutions. It really needs to be a one-on-one relationship. Each community provider needs to have a one academician that's their to-go person. They have their cell phone number on a speed dial. If any of these things happen, if any of these problems happen to any of the patients, they call them immediately and they should have a quick response rather than going through so many answering machines and, you know, voicemails and all that to actually get to the answer. So this collaborative relationship is a key, and it's very difficult to achieve. However, if it happened, it will make things a lot easier for the patients in the community.
Looking ahead, what kinds of research must those in the field conduct in order to further improve outcomes for patients with multiple myeloma?
I think the main problem are that these clinical trials are done in academic cancer centers. And that's why when these drugs are approved, they're having a hard time being implemented and used in the community. I think all of the clinical trials in the future should actually target to be in the community, to put more effort, more budget to have clinical trials in community sites. It is a lot more difficult to have clinical trials in the community than in academic institutions, but it's worth the effort, because if a community site have already given these drugs on a clinical trial, they're very comfortable giving it once it's approved and ongoing.
Finally, Dr. Daniel Peters spoke about potential developments in acute myeloid leukemia. What kinds of early phase clinical trials and translational research are you involved with here at Georgia Cancer Center or Augusta University? How might this research help improve outcomes for those with AML or other disease types?
This is something that I'm very passionate about, but you know, AML really causes a lot of immune dysfunction. And by immune dysfunction, I mean dysfunction in the normal patient's immune system that's just trying to live its life, do its job. And so one of my interests is really to look at what are sort of these drivers of immune dysfunction, what kind of cellular components or subsets are dysfunctional in a patient with AML's immune system, and which of these cells can be targeted, exploited, removed, in hopes that we can either create less intensive cellular therapy approaches for patients with AML. So patients who are going down this pathway of receiving the azacitidine and venetoclax, are there perhaps autologous cell therapies that we could use that should avoid some of the big side effects that you'd get with graft versus host disease, bone marrow transplant, or are there other ways to exploit the host immune system to augment or improve outcomes with sort of standard allogeneic stem cell transplant? Another thing I'll just say is that I kind of uniquely have the opportunity and privilege here at the Georgia Cancer Center with my position to both diagnose and treat patients with acute myeloid leukemia and also take them up to and through the transplant process in and of itself. So in a lot of other centers, the leukemia care and the transplant care are partitioned, but here I can actually do both. And so that sort of enables me to do some of these translational projects and some of the research that I'm interested in and just how this would translate into benefiting patients. Essentially, what I'm hoping to do is find new therapies that are going to improve outcomes, cause less side effects, and be more accessible to a variety of patients who have AML.
Looking ahead, where does the field as a whole need to go in order to further optimize outcomes for patients with acute leukemias and other high-risk hematologic malignancies?
I think the field is moving in some of these directions already. There are going to be some things presented at the upcoming American Society of Hematology or ASH meeting here that I think are really going to change the treatment paradigm potentially in AML. I think the field is moving towards leaving this old paradigm of 7+3 intensive chemotherapy for newly diagnosed patients with AML who are young and fit, and really looking at some of these other regimens, particularly azacitidine and venetoclax. That's going to be an interesting story to watch, and having the field move toward a less intensive approach and less toxic approach up front. And then also another interesting story that's going to be kind of borne out as there's more adoption of this azacitidine and venetoclax regimen up front is how do additional targeted agents fit into that? This is going to be a big thing that the field needs to work out. Should we be doing triplet therapy? So azacitidine, venetoclax, plus one of these target agents that we've talked about today. Is it going to be sequencing of therapy? Is it something else? So I think those are questions that are going to need to be answered in the field that people are working on.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.